Shemot B'nei Yisrael Habaim Mitzrayma Eit Yaakov Ish Uveito Ba'u. OU Israel presents
in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Shemot, the first sedra of the book of Shemot. We have completed Vayechi last Shabbat. Recording and first broadcast, the 17th day of Tevet 5772, corresponding to the 12th day of January 2012, which reminds me to wish a very happy birthday to Rabbi Neil Winkler of Fort Lee, New Jersey, who is, I won't tell you, how old today, which makes him older than I am. That's a hint. Last week's show was recorded on Asara B'Tevet, and whenever you listen to it, I still was in the mood and the mode of the fast day. So let's get out of that, but first, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tehiena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod, ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvoro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha umeafela laora umishibud lagu'ula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. I'd like to start, which I think is the best topic for beginning the book of Shemot. Okay, I'll qualify that. A good topic to start Shemot. I don't know if it's the best for the beginning, but it is a tribute to women. Moshe Rabbeinu is born in this week's Parsha. Very soon after the Torah describes at the beginning of the book and the Sedra of Shemot the oppression and slavery into which the people of Israel were plunged, immediately thereafter we learn of the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, the future Redeemer of Israel, whose birth is sort of a ray of hope in the darkness of Egyptian servitude and oppression. At least that's how we relive it each year when we get up to this Sedra. The book of Bereshit ended last week with the family of Yaakov, his sons, Yosef, and his brothers, having expanded into a multitude of people. And now, at the beginning of Shemot, the king of Egypt, who is described as a new king who did not recognize Yosef, or did not want to acknowledge Yosef, and he is the one that labels this large, large family group as Am B'nei Yisrael, a nation. We're not even a nation yet, and a Pharaoh, enemy of the people, is the one who labels us Am, a nation. It's a very special thing. Not yet about women, but we'll get there. The birth of Moshe makes him now the main character in the rest of the Torah. And yet, watch how women were completely necessary and beneficial to the whole story. We start at the beginning of the book with mention of two midwives named Shifra and Pua. Shifra and Pua are some, in by some commentaries, are identified as Yocheved and Miriam, who we'll meet shortly. And others say, no, they were just two anonymous midwives. Some actually say they weren't even Jewish midwives, they were Egyptian midwives. And nonetheless, the Torah testifies that they, whoever they actually are, Shifra and Pua, defied the decree of the king to kill baby boys. The king had this thing that he wanted to make sure the Redeemer that was prophesied or predicted by astrology would never be get a chance to live. So he tells the midwives who tended the Jewish women that if you see that it's a girl, you could let her live, but if it's a boy, kill him. The Torah testifies that they defied that decree, and they kept alive the boys who were born. And the Torah records that they received a reward from God, and we won't get into that now. But our first heroines are Shifra and Pua, whoever they are, who defied the evil king's edict to kill the boys. When the king found out that the boys were not being killed off by these midwives, he had a second plan. His second plan was drown all boys born in the Nile. Our next heroine is Miriam. Miriam, the older sister of Aharon and Moshe, and the daughter of Amram and Yocheved. Miriam is referred to as Miriam HaNeviah, the prophetess Miriam, for, as far as I am aware, one prophecy that is recorded in the Torah. When, or in the episode that I'm about to describe, Amram, as leader of the community, told the husbands to separate from their wives and stop having children, because the oppression and the slavery was totally a cause for despair. Miriam, at the young age of 5, we are told, spoke to her father and said, "Your decree is harsher than Pharaoh's." Pharaoh said, "All the girls shall be kept alive and just the boys shall be killed." And you, in essence, are killing off the entire nation. No boys, no girls, no husbands and wives living together, and no births. As a result of that, Amram came back together with his wife Yocheved, the daughter of Levi, and the result of that union, or reunion we'll say, was the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. Then we have the Torah telling us that after 3 months from Moshe Rabbeinu's birth, the family was no longer able to hide the fact that a boy had been born and not drowned in the river. And therefore Yocheved, our next heroine, makes a waterproof basket and puts Moshe Rabbeinu into it, the future Moshe Rabbeinu, and floats him on the Nile, under the watchfulness of his sister Miriam, who we've already met. The next heroine of the story is the daughter of Paro, the princess of Egypt, who later in Tanakh is referred to by the name Bitya, and many people have sort of corrupted that to Batya, daughter of God. But Bitya is the name that she is given later. And at this point she is Bat Paro, the princess of Egypt. And she goes down to the Nile to bathe. and she sees the basket floating in the water, and she retrieves it and sees that it's a baby, and wants to keep the baby. Miriam, who has been watching, notices that the baby Moshe, her little brother, is not is refusing to nurse from any of the Egyptian wet nurses, and recommends to Bat Paro that she can go and get a wet nurse from among the Jews, and she goes and brings Yocheved, the mother of Moshe, who is given her son back to her by the daughter of Paro, to nurse him and return him to the palace after he is weaned, however long that took. So Yocheved again is one of the heroines of the story, as is Bitya, daughter of Paro, Miriam, and let's not forget Shifra and Pua. All of this, and then of course, Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro, raises Moshe, and it goes on from there. There are sources that we have that say, Biglal Nashim Tzadkaniot Nigalu Avotenu Mimitzrayim. In the merit, or because of, righteous women, our ancestors were redeemed from Egypt. The implication is that the men would not have deserved redemption on their own. It was in the merit of the women. And our sources go further, not just the above-mentioned women, but all of the women of the Israelites in Egypt took it upon themselves to maintain their beauty. I imagine that means the equivalent of going to the beauty parlor and doing makeup and manicures or whatever, in order, and to entice their husbands, to keep up the spirits of their husbands, and to produce children. And in their merit, as if to imply that the men had sunk to a very low level of faith, or whatever, and would not have been worthy of redemption had it not been from the righteous women of the Israelite people. So that's the focus on women for Shemot. But, as long as we're talking about this, let's go back to the book of Bereshit. We have the major personalities in the book are Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, as far as we are concerned. But watch or remember how women played a crucial role. Avraham, blinded by his love of his son Yishmael, was unaware, or if he was aware, did not want to act upon doing anything, of the bad influence Yishmael was exerting on Yitzchak. When Sarah Imenu, Mother Sarah, says to her husband Avraham, "Get rid of this child and his mother," he hesitates. He doesn't want to do that. She, Sarah, is the one who sees the necessity of this for the continuity of the Abrahamic tradition, we'll call it, which becomes Jewish Judaism. And God says to Abraham, "Listen to what Sarah tells you to do." And he acts. Next generation, Yitzchak, is blinded to the flaws and faults of his son Esav. And he intends to give the major blessings of the father to his son Esav. Rivka, Rebekah, Imenu, tells Yaakov, "This is what you've got to do. Bring me 2 goats, I will prepare the special dish that your father likes, and you will bring it to him before Esav gets back from the field. in order to receive the bracha that you are destined to receive. It was not in Yitzchak's plan. It was Rivka's doing. And so it happened. And then it was Rivka who tells Yitzchak to send Yaakov back to her hometown to find a suitable wife. He comes back with four wives, two major wives, we'll call it, Rachel and Leah. But it was Rivka's prodding that got Yitzchak to send Yaakov back home to Rivka's hometown. And then there, Yaakov was blinded by his love of Rachel. He fell in love with her and did not have the perspective that Rachel and Leah themselves had to engineer the giving of Leah first to Yaakov, and then his marriage to Rachel, and then the addition of having children from the Shfachot, as they are known, Bilhah and Zilpah, and that produced the sons of Yaakov, who became Shivtei Ka, the tribes of God, through the planning of women. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, our four foremothers, were the ones who stood behind their husbands, the Avot, and brought about everything that was supposed to happen. A tremendous debt we owe to the women, and we're not finished. Yosef is married to Asenath, and she, according to some sources, was the one who told Potiphar that Yosef was innocent of what Potiphar's wife was accusing him of, and that might have saved his life. I would say it certainly did. And Yehuda is, again, blinded by certain episodes and thinking and whatever. And it is Tamar, his daughter-in-law, who has the perception and the insight to engineer having him, Yehuda, sleep with her, which was a pre-Sinai version of Yibum, we won't get into that now, producing Peretz, who is the forefather, the forerunner of King David and Shlomo HaMelech, and the entire Davidic line, up to and including Melech HaMashiach and beyond. Again, women. And there are more. There are more, but this is so outstanding and so there that you can't miss it. Women play a major role in the development of the people of Israel. A number of weeks ago, when my youngest daughter, Orah, gave birth to her second son, Roi Yisrael, on that particular show, I wanted to play the song Vizakeni. The best I was able to find is a different song called Vizakenu, and I finally found Vizakeni, and I would like to play it now, not only in honor of my daughter's birth, but having given birth, but in honor of all of the Jewish women that I have just described, and in honor of the midwives who help with giving birth from then until today and beyond, including my niece Esther. Women, when they light Shabbos candles, Neirot Shabbat, the minimum is the reciting of the blessing. But in most Sidurim, and on charts and plaques that people have, there is a meditation and a prayer that is said quietly by the woman while she ponders her performance of the mitzvah of lighting of Shabbat candles, and perform and ponders the upcoming Shabbat and life in general. She asks, Vizakeni, and please let me merit, Ligadel banim uvnei vanim, to raise children and grandchildren, Chachamim unevonim, wise and insightful, Ohavei Hashem, offspring, children and grandchildren who will love God, Yirei Elokim, and fear Him, Anshei Emet, Zera Kodesh, people of truth and a holy seed, Devekim Bashem, etc. I shouldn't skip, even though the song might. Devekim Bashem, cleaving to God, Umeirin et ha'olam, and they shall bring light to the world, B'Torah uv'masim tovim, with Torah, study and practice, and good deeds, uv'chol melechet avodat habore, and doing all of the work of the Creator. This is what Jewish women all over the world pray for every Friday evening, right after they light candles. This is part of what I've been trying to say the whole time, that women have this role in Jewish life, and it hasn't changed. They still are the mainstay of the Jewish home and family, and they are truly the help that their husbands need to reach their potential. In addition to having their own identities and reaching their own potential, they also have this helping role. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Shemot and for the song that I have just described. Hi, welcome back to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Shemot. Let me explain what these two halves of the show came from. Once upon a time, a long time ago, about 14 years ago, I started broadcasting Torah Tidbits audio on Arut Sheva, the actual radio. Subsequently, when they were taken off the air by the government, the programming continued on the internet, which it had started, and there was an overlap between internet broadcast and actual radio broadcast, and then it became only internet radio. Arut Sheva decided, it's really now Israel National Radio it's called, to keep a format of a radio broadcast, which means with specific timings of shows, commercials, news update, and from my point of view, I was instructed to keep my show to 2 23-minute halves. Subsequently, the show was also broadcast on OU Radio, and there they did not do the radio format, which meant the show could be as long or as short as I wanted to record it. So for a while, I was recording more for OU Radio, then I was restricted to the 46 minutes, but things got busy and I decided that everybody gets the same 46 minutes in 2 23-minute halves. So if you're listening to this archived or you're listening to this on OU Radio, it probably is puzzling why at the end of the first half I say, hold that thought, we'll be right back, or something like that, and then immediately I welcome you back. So I started putting the TV themes at the beginning of each half, And that's the way it is. So when it's broadcast in the live stream of Israel National Radio, it makes more sense to say, hold that thought, we'll be right back, because that happens and is followed by a news update and commercials, and then the show continues. In the archive, that's taken out, and in OU Radio, it's not there in the first place. So that is my explanation for how these things work, and I've been recording and editing it down to 23 minutes to the best of my ability. Okay, now, just to repeat, you can write to me at tt@ou.org if you have, can identify the opening of either the first half or the second half or both when we have those. And please include your age, because I'm very surprised sometimes when someone too young to remember a certain show is able to identify it. And most of these are from my own past television watching lifetime, and I choose the shows that I remember and the themes that don't give it away by announcing in advance that it's Hopalong Cassidy or something like that. Okay, back to where we left off. I consider the whole first half basically to have been a tribute to women, mostly Jewish women, but it is intriguing the possibility that Shifra and Pua were Egyptian and not Jewish, and they also are good. In other words, we owe a lot to women. Let me just add one more interesting point. There is a discussion in Halakha as to whether the fast of the firstborns, which is on Erev Pesach, is male only or it includes female. The idea of it being male only is that our concept of Bechor, when it comes to Pidyon HaBen, or Bechor when it comes to inheritance, a double portion, is a male Bechor, a male firstborn, and not a female firstborn. On the other hand, in Egypt, during the smiting of the firstborns, plague number 10, we see a statement in the Torah that there was no house without a person who was dead, which is unlikely statistically that every household had a firstborn male. So the answer is that firstborn females were also killed. And therefore, as an expression of gratitude for having been passed over, hence the name Passover, and spared Makat Bechorot, girls should fast also. And sure enough, there's an opinion that they should. And the prevailing opinion, though, is that girls do not fast, even, I'm talking about the firstborn in their family. One of the reasons given for their not fasting is what I've been saying up until now. Biglal nashim tzadkaniyot nigalu avotenu mimitzrayim. Our ancestors were redeemed in the merit of the righteous women among the Israelites in Egypt. And that means that they have nothing to atone for, and it is the men, males, firstborns. And this really is a topic for Erev Pesach show, but we'll say it now, and if we repeat it, we repeat it, and if not, you'll hear it at least now. Male firstborns fast, not just in gratitude to God, but as an atonement for not having been deserving of being spared, and were only spared because God had promised that we would be taken out of Egypt. And therefore, we have an unpaid bill, so to speak, and it manifests itself in the custom of the fasting of the firstborns. Not going to get into now how you get out of the fast if you want to. I'll just tell you that since I'm 18, or maybe 17, which is quite a number of years ago, I've been fasting every Erev Pesach, and that's a very meaningful experience. I recommend it for people who can handle fasting, and that it won't upset their Seder, since the first thing that you have to break your fast is the first cup of wine and then a measly piece of karpas, and then a delay till the second cup of wine, and it could really wreak havoc on someone who does not fast extremely well. Anyway, that's besides the point. You should also know that a firstborn son, until the age of mitzvot, his father is supposed to fast for him. And if the father himself is a firstborn, many have the custom that the mother fasts on behalf of the child, or goes to a siyum to release herself from the fasting. Anyway, all of this delaying the song, Vizakeni, I want you to listen to it. It was sung twice at my grandson's brit, and the previous brit, the 2 years before that, it was also one of the songs. It's a beautiful song, and think of grandmothers, mothers, and daughters who will become the next generation's mothers when they light candles for their household. Remember, men are obligated on Neirot Shabbat also, but they fulfill that obligation when their wives light candles. And this extra prayer that they put in, beautiful, for special children and grandchildren, and may they all merit the best.
Zakeini ligadel banim uvnei vanim chachomim unevoinim Oy avei Hashem yirei Elokim Anshei emes zera koidesh b'Hashem dveikim voi da sa voi re.
That was Vizakeni by Baruch Levine, from an album by the same name, Vizakeni, the lead song of that album. A beautiful album and a beautiful song and a meaningful prayer. And all of us owe a special debt of thank you and gratitude to our wives and mothers and grandmothers who have said that prayer for all of us every single time they light candles. We owe them a lot, not just for that. And I did check, the words are pretty much all there from the tefillah. Perhaps one phrase was rearranged in order to fit the melody a little bit better, but did a very good job, and I get very emotional when I hear that song. So, let's move on. There's a small point that I wanted to call to your attention. I think it has meaning. The previous paro, the one that we met with Yosef, seemed to have an appreciation of Yosef, very, very high praise for him, and relied on him greatly, and was very, very respectful of Yosef's father, Yaakov, and his brothers, and of God. He appreciated the whole picture, even though he was of a different persuasion, we'll say. This in Shemot, when we meet Vayakom Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim, Asher lo yada et Yosef, a new king arose who did not know Yosef. He did not know God either, or refused to know God. In fact, when Moshe Rabbeinu was sent to him and tells him, if you don't let my people go, God's people, then he will kill your firstborn, Paro's reaction is, who is this God that you're talking in his name? I don't want to hear from him. I don't want to hear about him. Totally different leader of a ruler of Egypt. So I think that's an interesting and important point, because a leader of another nation that respects God will not do things to us, the people of God. And when a leader rejects God, then we are his prime targets for the same reason of rejection. Know what else is in Parshat Shemot? The burning bush. Hasneh, the bush that burns but does not get consumed. Our sources tell us that God's prophecies and conversations with Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush lasted 7 days. It was not a quick, Hello, I'm God. I'm sending you into Egypt to take the people out, finished and done with. Moshe added to that time significantly by keeping up the question, why me? But there is something specific in this whole episode of the burning bush that I often call to people's attention. God says to Moshe, Va'ered, I heard the crying of the people, and I know their pain. Va'ered lahatzilo miyad Mitzrayim, I am going down to save them from the hand of Egypt, ulhal'oto min ha'aretz hahu, and to take them from that land, el eretz tova urechava, el eretz zavat chalav udvash, el makom hakena'ani v'achiti v'emori, v'haprizi v'achivi v'hayevusi. I am going down into Egypt to take the people up to the land, the good and expansive land, a land flowing with milk and honey, first time of 14, 15 times that Israel is called a land flowing with milk and honey, the place of the Kana'ani, etc., etc. In other words, right now it's Kana'an, but it will become Eretz Yisrael. I am always struck by the fact, and that's why I repeat it, that these two plans of God are really a single plan. We're talking about one verse without a breath. I will go down and take the people out and up to Eretz Yisrael. It was never God's plan just to free the people from slavery and let them wander anywhere they wanted. However long it took till we got to Eretz Yisrael was our problem. God's plan, take us out of Egypt, bring us to Eretz Yisrael. No breath in between those two parts. Then, a little bit later, God says to Moshe, when Moshe said, what should I tell the people? How will we know? You know, etc., etc. God says, Ki ehye imach, I will be with you, vizelecha ha'ot, and this is the sign, ki anochi shalachticha, that I have sent you. Bahotziacha et ha'am mimitzrayim, when you take the people out of Egypt, ta'avdun et ha'elokim al ha'har hazeh, you will come back to this mountain, which our tradition says was Mount Sinai, and you will serve God here. That's your proof. Later, when God gives Moshe the signs, take your staff, throw it down, turns into a snake, grab the snake, turns back to a staff, put your hand inside your cloak, pull it out, it'll be leprous, put it back, take it out, it will be healed, take water, pour it on the ground, and it'll turn to blood. Those are all, I don't even know what you want to call them. They were meant to grab Paro's attention and grab the attention of the people. But the real sign that the Exodus is divine is that it will be followed through with revelation at Sinai. And here you have what I have always referred to as the package deal. God takes us out of Egypt, gives us the Torah at Sinai, and brings us to Eretz Yisrael, where we are supposed to live happily ever after, a life of Torah. If we have not yet gotten to the happily ever after, I say it again, it's our fault, not God's. What I have just spoken about happened over 3,300 years ago, but it belongs today as well. Come out of Egypt, take the Torah, and live a life of Torah in the land of Israel. On that note, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.